Okay, so I don't even remember who I was talking to this about yesterday, but might as well talk about it now. So the first miracle that we see that Moshe introduces to Paro is which one? No, before Dam.
Of the Tanin.
The Tanin, right? It is the miracle of the Tanin. Now, we sometimes equate this with the story just a few prakim before, where Hashem tells Moshe, "Turn your staff into a snake." Or that was one of the things that happened. Except the Torah goes out of its way to use different words. The first time, how is it described? Nachash. How is it described in the Paro story?
Tanin.
Tanin. I mean, therefore, there is a mechlokes amongst the Mefarshim. What exactly was this tanin? So, you do have Mefarshim who believe that this was indeed a snake, like Rashi, right? Basically, equates this that this is a tanin, right? Rashi says nachash, right? Perek Zayin pasuk Tet. He says it is nachash, and therefore he equates it. And you find this in other Mefarshim as well. You find it in the Svarno, you find it in some of the Targumim, in the Targum Yerushalmi, that they understand that what we're dealing with here is a snake, and obviously part of what motivates this is the parallel between the story just a few prakim ago, and he assumes that these are very similar. Now, part of the motivation, even amongst the modern scholars to believe this, is that snakes were the symbol of the Egyptian priests and magicians. This is something that we know. And if you look at many of the old paintings, right, the cave drawings of the priests, what are they holding? Serpent staffs. Right? They're holding sticks, which look like snakes. Right. This is standard, right? Don't believe me. Right, you can see. Right? Snake, they have pictures of gods, that sticks that are made of that look like snakes, right? This is like a very standard picture that we have in Egypt. But many Mefarshim don't believe this. I mean, they say, well, Tanin everywhere else, what does Tanin mean almost every other place in Tanakh, or not almost every, but many other places in Tanakh, clearly? Is either a crocodile or some other monstrous sea creature. Yeah. So, for example, Rashi, Breshit, Aleph, Chaf Aleph, Taninim, Dagim, Gdolim, Shebayam. So either these are some big fish, or B'divrei Agadah, Leviathan, Uvenzugo. Or it's the, right, it's the Leviathan. And clearly in many other places in Tanakh, that's what this is. When you look at some of the places that appears in Yechezkel, we're talking about a much more mythical creature, or we're talking about a crocodile. And therefore there are several Mefarshim, both traditional and non-traditional, who assume that what's going on here is that. So for example, if you look at Rav Zvi Hoffman, he says, Yesh lo sholim, tanin zezehem anachash. He said, if you think it's a snake, that's a problem, because normally a tanin is not a snake. Right? That's not what it is. A tanin is a snake. Because tanim are, in general, a monster of the sea. Or those who happen is relatively modern. Relatively. So, like, he's 150 years ago, Germany. So, you know, his Hebrew is a bit more modern.
And
even if it's some sort of sea serpent, that's a little bit different. And he says, even if they're both snake-like, you know, they're not quite the same. The one he used to impress the Jews was just a snake. When he's going up against Paro, it has to be more impressive. So it's crocodile or sea serpent or something. But in general, Tanin is much more is much more along that line. And as you have in Yechezkel, why would you? In Yechezkel, we have the Tanin, and what is this mythical sea creature slash crocodile? Who does this represent? Paro. Paro self understood himself to be the great sea crocodile monster mythical creature. That's what he said. It is a pasuk in Yechezkel. It's not like Perek Chavtet pasuk. Not the same Paro, admittedly. Not the same Paro.
Just a practical thing at that point, because the crown of Egypt. I don't know if it was Low Egypt or Upper Egypt had a snake on it.
I don't think it's practical. That's part of the symbolism that was inherent in the society. Meaning,
and so when they combined, they had combined the crowns. So
I think you're also combining cause and effect, right? Meaning, right? It wasn't like it was just on the crown, and therefore they came to see themselves that way, right? This was part of the myth, the mythology. And so Yechezkel Chavtet Gimel Daber Vamar Dakol Amar Adonai Elohim Hineni Alecha Paro Melech Mitzrayim Hatanin Hagadol Harovetz Betochi Arav Asher Amar Li Orivani Asitini. Right? This is a pasuk. This is, by the way, from the Haftarah, which we read. We read one. Actually, I've read this Va'era or Bo. One of them is Va'era, one of them is Bo. There are two of them. I think this one is indeed. It's a good question, actually. Which one is this? It's one of them. There are two of these. And it is. Drum roll. Right? This is indeed this week's. Yes, it is this week's. Right, next week's is the one from Yirmiyahu. So the second possibility, and again, Rav Hirsch takes this as well, says that it is this, and then obviously the symbolism is so possibility one that it's a snake. This makes sense because this is what the Egyptian magicians used to use, and that's why it's the logical thing to use. They had their staff serpent things, and therefore, if you're going to one-up them in their magic, so you do it on their own terms. If you think that it's this crocodile or more mythical sea creature, so then, based on what we have in Yechezkel, assuming, which is not necessarily the case because there are hundreds of years between them, but assuming that certain parts of the mythology were shared, you could say that part of it is because the pharaohs viewed themselves as these mythical controllers of the sea, and the imagery was this crocodile slash sea creature, and therefore we use this to mock Paro's self-perceived power, right? Meaning I can control the Tanin. Right, Kasuto goes even farther, right, and says that the reason that in Shmot Dalid, right, in Moshe's case, it was a snake, and here it was the crocodile, is because Moshe's story happens in the desert, and this happens by the Nile, and therefore we switch based on on context. Right, meaning, you know, in context, you do different things. I cannot attest that this is true because I really don't know Greek. But in the Septuagint, it translates it as a dragon.
That's so much cooler, though.
Sure. I don't even know what to tell you. This is the Greek word. You can do with it what you want.
Yeah, sure,
right? A bunch of letters that I look at and that mean nothing to me. But that thing.
It's Greek to me.
Yes. Yes. Bidiuk. Bidiuk. And in which case, this is super impressive magic, right? This is, he created a dragon out of whatever, and I guess that was supposed to scare them. Now, I will just point out that it's interesting to note that according to Chazal, and this is quoted in Rashi, what was the nace of the swallowing? Right? The nace of the swallowing was what?
Because it was after it turned back into a stick.
But it was after it turned back into a stick, right? That the stick swallowed the other sticks, right? Not that the snake swallowed the snake. Now, one could suggest that this actually works with what we know about the Egyptians, because, you know, this is actually very symbolic, right? Remember, their staffs were shaped like sticks. Their staffs were shaped like snakes, right? So it actually would be a very interesting scene where maybe they are sticks, but they are meant to look like snakes, and that is part of the And that is part of the mystique here. Now, again, a lot of modern academics have noted that there is a lot here that we can gain by looking at some of the pictures from the Egyptian magicians that we have, where they do seem and some of the narratives that we have, where we have stories like this, where these are some of the miracles. Swallowing in general in Egyptian mythology was a sign of destruction. So here, if you are swallowing up, the sign of the priest, so that means they're going to be destroyed. Right, but there is a lot of nuance that you can read into it if you look a little bit into the historical things. And again, you know, I just, you know, Googled around until I just got some of the pictures. But you see, right, a lot of these snake staffs that you have here. Holding snakes is also a depiction of power for some of the gods that you have over here, which is also why this is part of, right, maybe why you're holding a snake and why you're... and then, right, they note that in some of these, right, swallowing is a sign of destruction or absorption of power in much of the ancient texts. So in like the pyramid texts, where some of these gods swallow their spirits, or even swallow serpents, right? In some of these,
when it discusses how Egyptian like souls, if you to be guilty.
Correct. I gave that last year. That's a different symbolism, but that the way your soul, parenthetically, right, the way your soul is judged to be guilty or innocent is that your soul is weighed, and if it's too heavy, it's heavier than a feather, I think, in some of the myths, then you're thrown into the crocodile, the sea monster hell creature of the Nile. So when the pasuk says "Vayichbad et lev paro," that he made his heart heavy, that in Egyptian mythology means he's going to hell because his heart is heavy and therefore it will fail the test. So I heard that part first when I was in Gush. One of my chavrusas had told me that from his father, which is a really nice vart. I spent time on that last year, but okay, now I can throw it out again. It's always a good vart. Amichai Levy told me that when on the bus to we were like swapping varts on the way to a wedding in Shana Aleph, and I remember that one stuck with me from his father, Yamin Levy. In general, I think it is important that if you want to understand the fullness of the story. Realizing that it is speaking on a historical backdrop where there's layer and layer of symbolism, some of which maybe we can tap into, some of which we can't, deepens the story because, and this is why I think it's important, I'll just end with this, remember that one of the main purposes of the Makkod, as Hashem says it itself, is to attack the gods of Egypt. Now, we always wonder, what does that mean you made, right, you attack their gods? But if you realize that the Makkot are actually responding to particular mythological images, right, that they are taking the symbols of Egyptian power and attacking them directly, you understand that Hashem is actually waging a symbolic war with the perception of divinity that the Egyptians share. And therefore, in this case, it's not just academics sort of reading it back in. It's if we look at Egyptian history, we get a new insight into what it means that Hashem is not just teaching that he exists, but is actively, right? We always think about it in the most striking one, which is the Korban Pesach. But the truth is that the more you know about Egyptian history, the more you realize that every single one of the Makkot, and I once gave shir on this, just literally going through how academics have outlined every single one of the Makkot can be very easily understood as attacking a different theological claim of the Egyptians, a different one of their idolatrous symbols, gods, etc. Right? Whether it be Choshech, which is attacking Ra, right, the sun god, which is the most powerful of the god, right? That makes sense. That would be the end, right? If Ra is the most powerful god, then Choshech is going to be the penultimate before you, well, kill the firstborns, but that's obvious as the Makkabah Patish, but before you get to that, the fact that it's going to be Choshech, and again, that's one of those things that you should look through. Maybe next week we'll dive more into that. Today we just dealt with the very, very local one of the Tanin, but that should give you a taste of how much there can be in terms of actually understanding what's going on in the story and how Hashem is battling the Egyptian theology by sort of wading into a little bit of Egyptology and understanding it in that context.